space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't stop us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California.
down in South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive.
here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to www.shazizradio.com with Mad Science. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. Woohoo! Hi, Thomas.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, man, there's got to be a wise guy in every crowd. Anyway.
Word Association, man.
Huh?
Word Association.
Word Association.
Down.
Heat.
Back. Forth. Life. Death.
Heat.
Cold.
Oh, okay, cool. Now we got that established. Now we can get into today's today's show. All right, so now that we're done sounding like a bunch of babbling buffoons, then I put it in here in the chat room. Mad Science Show is live. Thermoelectric generators. So, whew. All right, so anyway, of all the things that we use to utilize electricity, the, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, the anomaly that we call electricity, you know, moving electrons around, atoms, protons, neutrons, and electrons and such, you know, vibrating them and all that kind of jazz. And then we get this nifty deal called electricity that we utilize to turn fans and do our heating and cooling and such. Well, the thing in common with everything that we do out there as far as generating electricity is heat. And also some cold as well, because you also need a temperature difference in order to be able to get, like for thermoelectrics, you got to have two different types of metals and a temperature difference, and this energy, the heat energy, will literally try to transfer from one to another, and when in the process of that, generate what we call an electric charge. So with that said, even after we generate electricity, the heat transfer doesn't stop there. There's waste heat in just about everything it is that we use, like transformers, for example. Prime example, if you go around and you check any of your electrical devices and you put your hand on the transformer, which, you know, like maybe the one you use to plug your phone in, you'll note that the transformer is actually warm. And if it ran too long, it'd actually get hot. And if it ran too long, it'd actually start decaying the insulation on the electrical wire, the permanent magnet wire. That's the simple terminology. Anyway, and once that breakdown occurs of the insulation on the magnet wire, then you end up with a dead short. When you end up with a dead short, then that thing will get yet even hotter until it finally destroys itself. So you don't want to have too much heat. So you have to figure out a way in order to get rid of heat in everything from electric motors to circuitry. You know, in your computer you got what's known as a heat sink that basically has a fan that blows air from the outside in onto your heat sink, which takes away that heat, blows the heat off of the deal in order to keep your processors cool, or your transistors or whatever cool, to keep the circuitry cool. Because even in those circuitries, that silicone can only take so much heat before it finally, you know, destroys the process that you utilize to you know, move data around and stuff. And the process of moving data, because you're using electricity to do just that, you generate yet even more heat. So today we're going to give you the key to free alternative energy, and that is one simple word: heat. You can use heat for a lot of different processes. If you go all the way back to the very first steam power plants, they used coal to generate heat to then in turn boil water into steam and then use that steam pressure in order to turn turbines, which in turn ran generator heads that ran your electricity. Modern day nuclear power plants, once again, using heat, where they take highly refined radioactive rods. And as these rods, because they're so highly refined and radioactive, really super hot, are decaying, the energy released heats the water to the extent that the water then boils into steam, and the steam pressure is then in turn used to turn generator heads once again. So there's all kinds of different processes that you can use heat for. Heat exchangers like your air conditioning unit and your refrigerators and your freezers and stuff all utilize heat. In your refrigerator and your freezer, you have a compressor that literally takes a gas and compresses it. Anytime you compress a gas, or air for that matter, which is a gas, you generate heat. And then when that gas is quickly released into an expansion chamber, you get the total opposite effect, because that instantaneous change of temperature and pressure then in turn produces cold. So, we've been using heat all along in order to generate the electricity, and the electricity that we generate in turn produces heat. The plasma reactor that you hear me talking about all the time would essentially be the equivalence of a micro version of a nuclear power plant. Essentially what it does is when you send the high frequency energy into the gas, such as argon, xenon, halogen, neon, helium, when you energize those gases into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, science tells us that light is heat and heat is light, vice versa, so we end up with a heat source that in turn, whatever we circulate through copper tubing inside that gas will have the heat transfer to bring that heat out of the plasma and energize the water into heated water or steam, either way. So, essentially when you're looking at my version of the plasma reactor, you're looking at a heat generating system, a boiler system, or whatever you want to call it. The key to it is the actual energy input that you're utilizing to get that heat. See, in electricity, in overseas from where I'm at, they use 50 hertz range, anywhere from 120 volts to 100 or 220 volts AC at 50 hertz, and we use it about the same over here, but at 60 hertz. So our appliances won't last as long as their appliances, because their appliances aren't generating as much heat as our appliances are, because ours are being energized to a little bit higher temperature because of the frequency range at what it's running at. So the concept of what I'm talking about is literally utilizing junk energy to produce heat. If you take a high voltage arc and you pay attention to what's going on, you take that high voltage arc, it likes to eat through stuff. It'll eat through insulation, it'll start fires and such, and so that's one of the reasons why we don't use high voltage electricity in our homes like you would normally use your 60 hertz range. Even at 60 hertz range, you can still start fires. But it's so much easier with high voltage, because high voltage doesn't have the limitations. It can break through the insulation if the insulation isn't what's the word I'm looking for, Thomas? There's a technical term about how much insulation can actually take before, you know, you get breakthrough of the electricity. You know what I'm trying to think about here?
Thermal breakdown?
Yeah, the thermal breakdown of the material, that's the easiest way to say it. Before it actually reaches its thermal breakdown, you're supposed to have like a breaker switch or a doggone fuse that will break the circuit and stop the process so that you don't end up with a fire. That's the purpose for your entire breaker box that you have in your house. To keep your service from actually setting fire to your house, because that energy can produce a lot of heat. And if you go out and look at all the different temperatures of what thermal breakdown and what actually what actual temperatures things begin to combust, then you know where you stand as far as how hot you can allow any electrical device to get before it catches on fire. So, all along, we have had a sun out there that sends a lot of energy down in so many different waveforms, you know, radiant energy being stored through the ground, materials. You'll note that dark materials seem to absorb more heat for some reason, and light materials will seem to reflect more heat for some reason. So they've actually They've actually designed water systems, heating systems, where you can grab up that sunlight using dark materials and different types of materials that store heat, like salt. There's actually a salt water reactor, not a salt water reactor, but a molten salt reactor that stores heat energy. So everything that we're doing pretty much is involved with heat. So if you have a way in order to basically store heat, kind of like a thermos. We talked about before the show actually even started, we have some pretty good conversations off air, and we talked about different materials that absorb heat and different ways to actually make that process a little bit better, like such as I was talking about taking some rubber mats, dark black rubber mats, and using the sunlight to heat these up, and that they would hold their, they would retain some heat long into the night. Well, then Thomas mentioned about putting a water layer in between there, because the water and the material will be trying to transfer the heat back and forth to each other. And so that would absorb a lot of energy during the daytime and be able to hold it pretty long over the nighttime. Now, when you talk about thermal electricity, you take any two different types of metals, they all have different amounts of electrons for whatever atoms that whatever the material is made of, and the difference of the temperature in metals and the difference of the number of electrons will actually produce an electron exchange, which in turn is electricity. That's how a thermoelectric generator works. So, you know, whether you're talking about Peltier elements that they use in like igloo coolers, or you're talking about a thermal couple or a thermal pile like they would use in heater systems, which when they get to a certain temperature would actually produce a voltage that would turn things on and off, such as your fan, the thermostat that's actually in your furnaces or your air conditioning units that regulate temperatures will actually either use a electrical charge or a mechanical action, such as a spring expanding and contracting, to turn a switch on and off to actually control the temperature in your homes and such. So either way, you can see just by what we've said so far that thermal energy is really prevalent in just about every single form of electricity that we're actually using. Now, it's not to say like DC current, which is essentially, like your common 12-volt battery, which is charged up to one plate has more electrons on it than the other, and nature wants to balance that out. And then whenever you put a light bulb or a load to it, then it gives it a path for that energy to flow, and in the process of that transfers the energy from those plates to the other. That's the only one that I can think about that really doesn't require heat, but can generate heat. You see what I'm saying here? So what's your thoughts on the matter, Thomas? Got any insight to that? No? Yeah? Man. Under the bus. Thomas! Where'd you go, my fine feathered friend? Alright.
I might have to let you go. I got something going on here.
Uh-oh.
Try to come back.
All right. Looks like we're losing Thomas for a minute or two or three. So anyway, the plasma reactor that I was talking about is not only a tuner. It's a heat transfer device. So instead of having to take highly refined radioactive rods, such as in a nuclear power plant, we can use energy such as like the microwave, for example. Have you ever thought about the process of how a microwave oven functions? You basically take Over here, we take 110, 120 volts AC, and we run it into a primary coil, which basically sends a magnetic field out to a secondary that is wound with a whole lot of different turns of magnet wire. And because of the size of the wire and the number of turns, it ramps the voltage up, drops the current down, and brings the voltage up to a higher deal, such as about 2,000 volts. A lot of the modern-day transformers don't actually have a transformer inside there. They use a... doggone it, what the heck is that called? It's a circuit, almost like the... Slayer exciter circuit. I can't remember what the name is. I'll have to look it up again. Anyway, so it ramps that voltage up. That voltage then in turn goes into a magnetron that has a magnet on one side and a magnet on the opposite side, facing away from the energy flow. So when that high voltage goes inside the magnetron, it's the equivalence of a tungsten element light bulb inside there, and it causes that tungsten element to get hot. That heat then in turn releases electrons into the little vacuum, the little space inside there, which is, like, once again, the equivalence of a tungsten element light bulb. And if you've ever noticed that when you're running a light bulb, tungsten element light bulb, incandescent, that's another word for it, when you're running that light bulb, you note that it generates heat, and that's what's going on inside that magnetron. Well, this generation of heat then in turn releases electrons inside there. The first magnetic field off the first permanent magnet begins to spin those electrons inside there, and once that occurs, the next magnet in line is essentially attracting that flow towards the opposite side of the magnetron. And it would be basically the equivalence of an antenna out the other side, that the by the time this electron flow gets spun up really good, you end up generating what we call a microwave, which is a really super short, fast wave. That microwave in turn goes out basically the equivalence of an antenna into your microwave through some wave guides that guides it down into the box where you put your food. Since water is a dipole molecule, and it has a positive and a negative side to it, as the microwave is traveling through the water molecules, it is rocking those water molecules back and forth as the peaks and valleys of the wave come through, and that rocking of the molecule produces friction, which in turn produces heat, which then in turn cooks your food. So with that said, the same process is going on when you use radioactive material. As the radioactive material is decaying, it's releasing energy in the form of heat that in turn boils the water into steam, and then the steam pressure builds up, and that steam pressure is utilized to basically turn turbines, which turn a generator head. So the same thing could be accomplished utilizing nothing more than a noble gas that, if something were to go wrong, that the gas would just disperse and the process would stop, and you would not have any kind of potential radioactive materials being sprayed all over the place. So basically, you're going to use what would have normally been classified as junk energy to heat up water and do the same job that either the coal fire power plant would have done or the nuclear power plant would have done, and you now have a steam generator. So we've been using steam power for so many years, and we've been using steam power to actually, you know, basically we're still boiling water. That's it. That's all we've been doing. And the good thing about boiling water and generating steam is that we can recapture some of the materials necessary to do the process to put back into the system, such as the water itself. You know, water turns into steam, boils into steam, which is now a gas, and it is run through condensers, which then condenses that steam back into water for the system again. So the process of, you know, actual steam power plants basically uses up a portion of what it took to actually generate that pressure to begin with. But the key to what I'm saying is that you can do it in a such more of a safety or safe manner than the process by which they use the highly refined radioactive rods to generate the heat for. So instead of having to have cooling ponds that you put in what they call classified depleted fuel rods in that are still hot, they're not hot enough to generate steam efficiently like they would if they were, you know, brand new. So instead of having to store these radioactive rods for 10 years until they finally decay enough that they cool themselves down to where they can now safely be stored into containers and buried underground or whatever, you can do the same exact process with any of the noble gases out there just by understanding how the energy works, how to generate the heat to begin with. And we also know that with different materials that we can actually store heat energy. So, using solar technology, we'd have the capability of using the sun's heat during the daytime to literally store up enough heat to continue to boil the water into steam in the nighttime. See, that's the big secret of the industry out there that nobody ever talks about. Everything that you've got that you utilize the electrical current with basically does the same doggone thing. It generates heat, you know, and they say heat is light and light is heat, vice versa. So if you can see it, then there's some temperature involved in it. The plasma reactor, using any of the noble gases, basically just uses the high frequency of the electricity to vibrate the gas molecules so rapidly that they generate heat, which in turn generates light. Whew, I gotta take a breath. So anyway, the whole key to what everyone is researching out there, a lot of people out there trying to research different ways to make different coils to get really super efficient, or even, you know, try to achieve over unity or whatever. But they're, in my point of view, they're basically going about it the hard way. Because everything out there that is tried has to have all these other things involved with them. Anytime you're exciting electrons, you're generating heat. So if you take just any high voltage and you know that that high voltage can literally produce enough heat to cause something to reach its thermal breakdown where it will ignite and or combust, then you now know that you have heat that you can actually transfer to do another job, such as boiling water. So, dang, man. I need somebody else to join me in here. Oh, man, I'm so tired. Anyway, you could build the equivalence of a nuclear reactor on a small scale or even a large scale. If it can be scaled up, it can be scaled down, vice versa. All it is being able to Understand that all you're doing is moving energy from one place to the next, to one form to the next. Science says energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can be changed. You can change it into different forms of energy, and the most prevalent form of energy that we've got to date is heat. We know that with temperature differences and different types of materials, we can actually produce a thermoelectric generator. So if you Google up heat energy, it says, what is heat or thermal energy? Heat, thermal energy, matter is made up of particles or molecules. These molecules move or vibrate constantly and rise the temperature of matter. That's the simplicity of the whole entire thing. Utilizing the sunlight, we can generate heat to heat water. We can generate heat to heat our houses. We can generate heat to cook with. Or we can generate heat to literally change the form of that energy into thermal electric energy that we can then in turn run our appliances, our inverters and such, to basically change that form from, you know, either DC to AC or vice versa, either way, whichever your need is. So there's a lot of different thermoelectrics out there, one of which is the Peltier element, which is a pretty cool deal. And if you go out and look at some of the different devices, Google it up or YouTube it and look at some of the videos of ideas that people have actually done for using Peltier elements, which works off of a temperature difference. One side gets cold, the other side gets hot whenever you put electricity to it. And when you put heat on the outside and there's a temperature difference on the other side, the process also works in reverse because of the materials inside the deal. So I actually had a few people out there that used Peltier elements to run nifty little gizmos where they use their body temperature differences of the body being 98.6 degrees and the temperature on the outside being cooler or whatever, to actually run little fans or lights or something like that. Charge up your cell phone using the Peltier element. There's circuits out there for that as well. There are all kinds of different thermal devices out there. Let's see, a thermoelectric generator, TEG for short, also called the CBEC generator, is a solid-state device that converts heat flux temperature differences directly into electrical energy through a phenomenon called the CBEC effect, a form of thermoelectric effect. So, what is the CBEC effect? All right. The CBEC effect, the CBEC effect is a phenomenon in which temperature differences between two dissimilar electrical conductors or semiconductors produce a voltage difference between two substances. We've been using this effect for a long time. We just haven't been using it on a large scale. Now see, NASA sent a probe all the way to Pluto, is what we've been told, using a piece of plutonium. That's kind of ironic, they actually went using plutonium to Pluto. Nonetheless, it was a thermoelectric generator. This thing had enough radioactivity in the plutonium to generate enough heat for 9 years. This thing traveled through the depths of space, got so far away from the Earth and the Sun that the sunlight would only be basically able to light up the equivalence of a 2-watt Christmas light bulb. And when you look back from Pluto to the Sun, all you see is a dot in the sky, kind of like you look up at the sky and you see stars. So anyway, this plutonium was able to generate enough heat to produce over 200 watts of power 9 years after it left the Earth. the 200 watts of power then in turn was able to run all the equipment necessary to run tests and take pictures and send that data all the way back through the darkness of space into the computer systems that basically showed you a picture of Pluto. So what do we got here? Jams and put in a popular mechanics science. I'll have to click on this, see what this is. Burning salt water on YouTube. Inventor waits for prime time. Yep. There basically is another another deal right there. See, back in the 70s, Dan Myers was running around in a dune buggy using hydrogen technology, and he was using radio waves to do basically the equivalence of what I'm saying you do with argon gas in order to energize that gas. But he was using them to separate the hydrogen and oxygen and use it to run it on demand. There is also an individual out there in modern day time that uses salt water because it already has a conductivity to it. It doesn't take as much, but a high frequency can literally ignite water on demand. Burning, you know, just like fire. And this particular individual, I saw a video where he was actually talking about selling out to any oil company or big company that wanted his knowledge on the deal and using his money to do something else. I'm trying to get the information to the people. See, the whole purpose of free and clean and renewable and alternative energy is that you got governments out there that are literally warring with other nations over resources. Now, they'll give you some other excuse why it is that they're doing it, but when it all boils down to it, that's what it's all about. It's a war over oil and who's going to control the price of, the value of a dollar or whatever monetary system that you got going on. And so when somebody says, you know, something to the extent is, I'm not going to accept dollar bills for money anymore, I want to be paid in gold for my resources, well, then, you know, people get upset and they end up finding reasons to go over there and fight with these individuals. He said, John Kansas, 13.56 megahertz frequency. See, and that's another thing right there. To find the right frequency range to actually energize and break up the water molecule, that's what Stan Myers was doing back in the 70s. And so if you can literally burn water on demand, you've got an unlimited source of fuel. When you burn when you use hydrogen technology, your exhaust ends up being water, because when the reaction occurs and it separates it, and then one has an implosive and one has an explosive. When it's all said and done, when it gets back out into the atmosphere again, it cools down and produces water again. So burning water, you get water. Of course, you know, once again, science said energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So we're taking them for their word right there. So that means that you've got an unlimited fuel source. Utilizing hydrogen technology, water, heat, and all the knowledge there. See, think about how a nuclear power plant actually has a problem whenever there is an explosion. What actually occurred during that entire process? You got really hot, highly refined radioactive rods that are decaying, and that in that process of decay is producing the heat energy that is actually boiling the water into steam. The steam in turn builds up pressure. In the process of separating or recombining oxygen and hydrogen together, you get an electric charge. Well, if you boil the water into steam and the steam pressure gets up high enough, you can literally get the same type of reaction that you would get inside of a diesel engine. They call it compression ignition. So you got all this pressure. Most boilers that run off of any type of fuel run anywhere from 650 to 1250 PSI. That's a lot of pressure. Too much pressure, and you end up rupturing whatever plumbing that you're basically sending the steam through. But let's say hypothetically that this pressure is built up and there is no way that it can be released because of the strength of the container that it's in. Once that pressure builds up so high that it can't disperse that energy, you get a hydrogen explosion. Basically, hydrogen explosion and implosion at the same exact time. So this destructive force then in turn takes all those particles of radioactive material and disperses them all over the place. Jamson said, I believe a small team can break the code, make a small steam boiler turbine for electricity production using the frequency 42.7 kilohertz times 13.57 or 56 megahertz and maybe 2.4 gigahertz. Well, I ain't never really checked the frequency range of the Beckett oil burner igniter that I utilize in my experiments, but it's a super freak. It's a high frequency, and you can pull off a lot of heat on that doggone thing. Even from the igniter itself, you can feel after you run it for a while that it's getting really warm. Using all kinds of different transistor technology, we're able to literally produce really high frequency radio waves like the Slayer Exciter circuit, for example. Using a TIP 42C transistor, some of them use different types of them, but that's one of the ones that I can remember that basically is a fast acting switch that's turning the power on and off so rapidly that it's ramping up the frequency range of the energy going through the coil system, and that sends out a wave that you can basically light up fluorescent lighting in midair without any connections. It's wireless energy, and it's that same process, that same circuit can be utilized to energize gas into the fourth state of matter. It's as simple as that. So ridiculously simple. If you had the right team together and you really seriously wanted to build a free energy device, it'd be done so rapidly it'd make your head spin. Because what we're talking about here is not rocket science. No voodoo version of plasma like the Keshi crew out there are always trying to scam people with to get money. It's something that you could do in your own labs out there. If you look at the plasma globe toys that they got out there, the science deal where you can see the little arcs coming to the glass, wherever you move your finger, the energy will follow you around. That is plasma inside there. It's using argon gas and high frequency to energize it into the fourth state of matter. And basically you have the equivalence of what would be like a Tesla coil inside a glass ball that has a vacuum that energizes that gas, and you can actually see the plasma being generated. There's heat involved in that process. And so if you want to utilize that heat instead of just using it for a pretty display, you can run a coiling system through there and circulate whatever water or liquid that you want to heat up inside the chamber itself. And so while you've got this display going on where you have the nifty lightning bolts coming following your finger around, you're also transferring that heat energy out to where you can take that heat energy from there and using thermoelectric knowledge be able to turn that energy back into electricity again. pretty cool stuff. So all we're doing is moving around energy. That's it. We're not creating it. We're not destroying it. We're just moving the energy from one point to the next. So heat is the key to free energy. Period. The heat differences, the cold, heat and cold, are ways by which we can utilize that to get other anomalies that are going on. By taking any gas, compressing it, or even just heating it, which also compresses it, then you build up pressure, and once that pressure is then in turn released into an expansion chamber and allowed to expand rapidly, all that heat energy is exchanged into cold. So it is possible to literally build a solar powered air conditioning unit that the hotter it gets outside, the more pressure it builds up inside the chamber. And then that pressure built up inside the chamber, when it gets high enough, will release a valve that will in turn allow that to expand rapidly into a chamber, causing a cooling effect on the opposite side. No compressor necessary, utilizing nothing more than just heat alone. When you heat something, it expands. When you cool something, it contracts. So all of that knowledge right now is being utilized in an inefficient manner. We're basically running electrical compressors that are compressing the air, which in that process, the compressor itself generates heat. The gas inside there is pressurized, and it's hot, and then once again it goes through an expansion chamber for the cooling effect that you get. That same process could be solarized to where you actually use the heat and the pressure generated by the heat to do the exact same process on a much larger and a much simpler and much safer scale, where you wouldn't have to worry about different types of gases escaping into the atmosphere or anything like that. So, with that said, we can boil water with the sun. We can literally store heat energy, just like a thermos. He said, Jamson said that Canisius discovered 13.56 megahertz works directly. 42.7 kilohertz is water resonant frequency that ultrasonic misters from home use for vaporizers conjugate for optimization using the Gunther Ratty and the Edward Mitchell cell computer software, and on board very inexpensive to test various frequencies and pulsing. Those sonic vaporizers are pretty impressive, because that also brings you into basically pre-treating a fuel source, so that you're sending the fuel source into any internal combustion engine into the intake side in the most efficient manner as possible. You're sending the tiny molecules broken down to its tiniest portions in basically the equivalence of a vapor into the fuel injection system that in turn is running your internal combustion engine. You can literally use the heat to control the engine itself, the hot and the cold. You can use the expansion knowledge that you got for HVAC heating and cooling to literally cool that engine down. And compressing that gas, you get that gas hot, and then run that same gas like your exhaust through an expansion chamber and let that expand rapidly. If you ever noticed, you look at the back of any internal combustion engine, you've got moisture coming out of your exhaust during the summertime. During the wintertime as well. Because there's probably more in the wintertime, I think. But either way, there's still a temperature difference from the heat that's going on inside the engine to the heat that's being released through the exhaust. That exhaust is a whole lot hotter than the air around it, which produces a condensation that actually drips out. And in reality, that's what ruins your exhaust system, is the water buildup inside that exhaust causes the exhaust system to rust from the inside out. That's why you see a lot of different motorcycles and stuff that have stainless steel type pipes that seem to last for a long time. They don't rot like, you know, your average metal exhaust system. So all this knowledge is already out there on the table. We got every single answer to every single question necessary in order to build the perfect engines, the perfect generating systems. It's just a matter of who you want to have control over the energy usage, or over the energy, the money made off of the energy, whatever. Utilizing everything that I said right now to this date, you have the knowledge to literally build your own heat generating systems. You need to be able to generate heat. They used to use wood. Burn firewood. That would boil water, produce steam, use that steam pressure to turn machinery or to turn turbines for electricity. They found that they could use coal, so they burn coal to generate heat to do the same process. They found that they could refine uranium, naturally radioactive material, and make this really hot material that would do the same process. And step by step, they always end up with byproducts that some would have been useful and the others not so much useful. Even the waste fuel that they put in the cooling ponds for nuclear power plants is still packed with energy. You could still generate electricity utilizing those radioactive rods. Using thermoelectrics that we've already got, you know, thermal couples, thermal piles, Peltier elements, different types of systems that have to do with thermoelectrics, you can still utilize what would have been the waste energy off of nuclear power to generate heat with a temperature difference that would in turn produce electricity. And so it drives me insane to hear people say there ain't no such thing as free electricity. Then you ain't been paying attention. Seriously. The sun has been blazing for what they say millions of billions of years. And when is the last time you got a bill from the sun? You can use the visible light spectrum to gather up electricity. You can use the heat energy from the sun to store up and turn that into electricity. You can use the heat energy to cook food. You can use the heat energy to boil water. For folks that think that I don't know what I'm talking about or think I'm crazy, how many times have you went to open your car door after it's been sealed up during the daytime and that massive amount of heat just comes rolling up out of there? Make you sweat instantaneously. You gotta roll your windows down and let all that heat disperse out of your vehicle before you can actually get in there. And then even after that, once you get in there and sit down on those vinyl seats, there's still heat energy stored in those seats. People make solar ovens, they make solar dehydrators, there's so many different ways to utilize the energy force that is heat that it's ridiculous. Most generally, when it comes to heat, that is the enemy of all electricity, all electronics, all the electrical appliances. You get it too hot, the thermal breakdown occurs, bearings wear out, and the doggone insulation off the copper wire basically fails. And then the thing becomes useless, which in turn isn't actually useless. Unless that copper wire is completely and utterly destroyed, you could take that copper wire, the same copper wire from every bad electric motor out there, unwind it, re-insulate it, wind it right back up, plug it in, and it will function just as well as it did if it was brand new. Because the copper atom still has the same amount of electrons. There's 29 electrons. One loosely coupled electron in copper is what science says. And so, even when you think that that electric motor is no longer good, it's still repairable. You can still salvage that. It was destroyed by heat. The thermal breakdown of the insulation on the copper windings created the equivalence of a dead short. Now you don't have all those turns in the copper wire, so now you don't have the strength of the magnetic field that you're generating in order to produce the rotation of the rotor or the stator, whichever. So, think about how many electrical appliances have actually went to the landfill and to the dumps because people didn't understand that they could actually be salvaged. That they could actually be repaired. The bearings could be replaced. The copper windings on there could be restored. All you would have had to do was take all that electrical wire off and re-insulate it with the whatever resin that they used to begin with. Or any insulation. Preferably something that had a lot higher thermal breakdown. The higher the thermal breakdown, the longer that motor will last. If you find an insulation that can withstand hundreds, if not thousands of BTUs or whatever, a lot of heat. If you find something that can withstand, that has the highest thermal breakdown, that is the best insulator that you'll put on that electric motor, and you can run that motor as hard as you want. As long as you never reach that temperature that causes it to reach its thermal breakdown of the bearing system or the insulation, you would have an electric motor that would last literally forever. It wouldn't fail. There's nothing to fail. The only thing that could possibly fail in any electric motor would be the insulation or the bearing system. That's it. Other than that, there's no breakable parts. You know, the brushes that wear out in DC motors, carbon brushes, those are easily replaced. But if you had a means by which you could still keep the conductivity of those brushes, such as you maintain the brushes and you keep them lubricated to where they can never reach their thermal breakdown, not even the brushes would fail in the electric motor. Starter, whatever. There's a lot of electric motors in automobiles that people go out and they buy for the windows, for example. There's a grease inside there, and there are carbon brushes inside there, but the actual rotor, the motor itself, is built so well that it never fails. The only thing that ever fails in those electric motors is the fact that the brushes, which are connected to the rotor, are in that grease, and when some of the carbon gets loose off of the brushes, then it basically turns the doggone grease into some crud that begins to push the brushes away from making a clean contact with the rotor. And so therefore it won't work anymore. So by taking the thing apart, which they make them, you know, where they're kind of like pinched over and there's not bolts, you got to bend some metal back and slide all the guts out, clean them out, and then put fresh grease in there and then put it back together, and the thing will work like it was brand new. So once again, that's some pretty impressive technology that usually ends up in a dump. You know, the only thing that really fails when you're rolling your windows up and down outside of a fuse is the, you know, mechanical portion where there's bearings or connectors that allow things to move up and down, that the friction finally gets this thermal breakdown and starts to tear into the parts. If you can keep any material from reaching its thermal breakdown, it will never fail. So we have the capability, the technologies, to literally make engines that would last forever. It would never break down. Because you're basically not getting your lubrication's not getting cruddy. Your parts aren't never reaching their thermal breakdown point, so they can't be tearing into each other. The technology's available right now, to this very day, right now. We could literally start building things that would last forever. It's as simple as that. Jamson said to really feel the heat of the sun, take an old 4-foot satellite dish antenna and glue broken mirrors to the surface, face it to the sun, put your hand where the INB would be, see how many seconds you, oh yeah, it's kind of like a magnifying glass trying to burn wood or whatever. Fresnel. Make you a Fresnel lens. Concave dish or whatever. Yeah, that sun can be focused. And that's another deal that they were talking about. Salt water, molten salt reactors. Solar powered molten salt reactors, where they were actually using the sunlight focused in on a container unit that would bring the temperature up to salt, to literally liquefy the salt. And that salt would hold heat for a long time. And you could turn, take that hot, that heat from the salt, exchange it into heat, into water, to heat the water, to boil the water into steam, to turn the steam into pressure, to turn turbines, to turn the generator heads. So, if you see the common denominator between all the different ways to push energy, you're talking about heat. Internal combustion engine, heat. We're burning fuel to produce pressure, to produce heat. That's it. You could turn any existing generator into a source to boil water into steam to run a generator head. So you'll be able to get the maximum amount of efficiency out of any existing engine out there right now. Your average engine runs, operating temperature runs anywhere from 160 to 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit. At 212 degrees, things start to boil. Anything above that, you're getting closer to superheated steam. So you could literally turn any old gasoline engine, or diesel engine for that matter, into a source of heat energy to produce steam, to run turbines, to produce electricity. It's that simple. It's so simple, it's ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to burn fossil fuels, what they classify as fossil fuels, and you're going to burn them anyway, why not use every bit of energy that that engine produces because of the burning of the fuel, it generates heat. Instead of dispersing that heat out into the atmosphere, you can direct that heat energy to where you want it to go. And basically, you're getting more power from the entire system than you can use. That's why your engines break down, because you got, if there was ever a case for over-unity about getting out more energy than you put in to a device, then the internal combustion engine should be that one that's first in line, because you take away one thing from an internal combustion engine, and it will literally generate enough heat to destroy itself. Take away the circulating system where the water can't be circulated through the radiator system, and that engine will destroy itself in short order too, because the temperature is going to continue to rise. Once the temperature rises, all that heat energy is going to produce a thermal breakdown that's going to cause things to fail. Rubber hoses will heat up and expand until they're overpressurized and blow, and that's the best case scenario. The other case scenario is you actually crack the block, or you work the heads on there, and now your engine just won't function anymore. We could build the perfect engine that would utilize, it'd be a focused heat engine that would utilize every single bit of what normally would have been waste, bring the fuel input down to the most efficient manner, such as what Jamson said in there earlier about the sonic vaporizers. Those sonic vaporizers, you can utilize those frequency ranges to break the fuel down and send the fuel in such an efficient manner that you're barely using any fuel, and the faster you get that engine running, the less fuel you use. That sounds crazy. That the more I step on the gas pedal, the less fuel that I'm going to use. That sounds crazy, but it's not. If you think about the actual way the inside of an internal combustion engine functions, and all the heat being generated in there, heat expands. So any gas or any pressure inside there, when it gets hot, just like the Stirling engine, it's going to pressurize, and that energy wants to go somewhere, either out the exhaust or by forcing the piston down and turning the camshaft and so on. But the faster that engine runs, the less time that you have for an actual burn of the fuel that you just injected into the system. So that's why you get to cramming a lot of fuel in there. It don't have time for all that fuel to burn. The piston's going up and down so fast, the valves are opening and closing so fast that your time is getting shorter and shorter, that fuel is actually in there and burning and causing the expansion, which is pushing the piston down. And so the faster you go, the less fuel you should be using. Now, if you think about it in the sense of the mass, the weight that you're having to pull, obviously when you first start taking off, it should use more fuel because you got to build up more power or whatever, but that's not the actual case, because vaporized fuel has a more explosive quality than a liquid fuel. If you understand what I'm trying to say, if you actually see how injectors function, you're squirting too much fuel into that engine, because as that engine is reaching its maximum RPMs, there's no way you can burn all the fuel in that combustion chamber fast enough to get the most efficient result out of it. That's why they ended up having to have a catalytic converter to reburn any waste fuel coming out the back. That's why you end up with so-called carbon emissions. Carbon monoxide being built up on the way out. If you design this engine properly, you would get a perfectly clean burn every single time. There wouldn't be no crud coming out the pipe. But try to put that in front of a mechanic. Somebody's been working on automobiles for all their life and have studied the books inside and out. Try to get that information to them. They will argue with you all the reasons why it is not possible to do so. In reality, if you design any engine to run off of any fuel specifically, That's the key word right there, specifically for a certain type of fuel. Then you can get that engine, you can design an engine that will literally run off of pure distilled water, nothing more than hydrogen and oxygen itself. You can use all existing technologies that already exist to end up with a system that is a basically a thermal exchanger slash guided heat engine. You can take the energy where you want it to go. You can get that engine to run using compression ignition, vaporization technology. You can use it for induction heating. The engine design itself, you could preheat the water before it ever even gets to it. Just look, the doggone diesel engine doesn't have a spark plug like the gasoline engine or the petrol engine, whichever one you want to call it. Gasoline engines and diesel engines, the difference is they don't have the same exact result. One of them has an explosion inside there. The other one just has a burn, and that burn is actually pressurizing and pushing the piston down. But the key to the diesel engine, which is more closer to running a water engine, is the fact that it uses compression ignition. The only time that you use the glow plugs in a diesel engine is to preheat the cylinder up to operating temperature. And then we know that with compressor technology, when you compress a gas, it gets hot. So the inside of that cylinder will get hotter and hotter the more that you run that. And then you take that heat energy and the compression combined literally burns the diesel fuel as it's atomized and sent into the intake system. So if you take a look at everything you know about the gasoline engine, and you take everything you know about the diesel engine, and induction heating, such as being able to boil water by running it through a copper tube and putting an electrical current to that copper tube, you can heat that water up before it ever even gets up there. And utilizing vaporization technology, atomizers, you can begin to heat that water up into steam and begin breaking it down before it ever even gets into the intake portion. By the time it gets up to the intake portion, it's already been atomized and vaporized and down into its smallest molecule. Once that superheated steam broken down into a vapor hits that hot chamber inside there, steam will expand 1600 times its volume. Water will expand when it's flashed into steam. It will expand 1600 times its volume, and there's the pressure that would push that piston down. And as that piston was coming back up from the separation of the hydrogen and oxygen, you would literally get compression ignition, because there would be heat, there would be pressure, and there would be oxygen, and there would be a small electric charge released inside that chamber when the hydrogen and oxygen separate from each other, that would in turn, all these things in conjunction with each other, would cause ignition and push that piston down. The same exact thing that happened when a nuclear power plant has a hydrogen explosion has occurred on a larger scale would be occurring inside that piston cylinder, inside that combustion chamber. So specifically designed, you can literally design a vehicle, an engine, internal combustion engine that would utilize all the forces that we know from everything that compressor technology, induction heating, to compression ignition, to vaporization, and I could go on and on. There's so many different things that you could add into this engine to make this the perfectly running engine. And by utilizing the proper materials, you could build this engine to such to where the only place that there is any heat involved would be inside the cylinder itself. See, actually, when you're running an internal combustion engine, you end up having a lot of vibrations that end up transferring in the form of heat to the engine block itself. You got the burning of the fuel, which is taking building up heat, which is also transferring to the engine block itself. And so that's where all this heat energy now has to be got rid of. You got heat energy from frictions from bearings, and so you have to have a lubrication, and most of the race cars that you look at out there will have cooling systems, oil coolers that will help to disperse the heat from the oil so that the oil doesn't break down in viscosity and become thin and cause the bearings to get hotter and finally reach their thermal breakdown. So even in the oil itself, the oil that we use to lubricate, if you can keep that oil cool, then the parts will not reach the thermal breakdown and they'll still be properly lubricated. The temperature from the vibration could be drastically or completely reduced by redesigning that engine to not allow vibration from what is going on inside the combustion chamber to actually transmit to the metal block or aluminum block or whichever style, even plastic. You could build an engine out of plastic that would do the same doggone thing. The materials that we build them in, the way that we design them, would make sure that that engine, which I call a focused heat engine, would keep that energy focused right into where it's needed for the combustion to occur and actually produce the downward force that pushes that piston and so on. So, in energy generation and the internal combustion engine technology, heat is the key. If you want to design a clean, renewable, alternative, free energy source, then you have to understand heat. And you can utilize that heat to not only generate electricity, but you can use the heat to generate cooling. So imagine you build this engine. You got to get rid of this heat that is built up inside the cylinder. You're not transferring the energy from the cylinder to the walls of the engine block itself. There's plenty of materials out there that have an incredible insulation factor. You'll see videos where people have put like foam materials, and they'll have a torch on one side of the material, and they'll have their bare hand on the opposite side of the material, and that heat will not transfer to their hand. So, if you think about that, on ways to ensure that that heat can't transfer, when you build the engine block out of a material that the heat cannot be absorbed through, you should be able to run this engine that I'm talking about 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and come up there and be able to touch it with your bare hand without getting hot, without burning your hand. That's how efficient this engine would be. And as far as the materials inside there, getting too hot and pistons can only reach a certain temperature, we've got materials out there that will withstand extreme temperatures. But we can also use the fuel itself to literally control the temperature. Such as, if I'm running this water engine and the engine begins to get hot, I can use thermodynamics to literally put more fuel in there needed, more fuel than's needed to bring that temperature down. I could also use the gas that would have been escaping through the exhaust to run through an expansion chamber to run through an intercooler around the cylinder that would cool that cylinder down to whatever temperature we decided we wanted that to be. If let's say, for example, if water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit and we decide that we want our engine to cylinders to run at 300 degrees Fahrenheit so that when the vapor was sent in there, it would instantaneously be hot and basically flash the steam pushing that piston down. When the temperature of the cylinder got too hot, all we'd have to do is take and refocus some of that energy to bring it back around to bring that temperature right back down to where it needed to be. It's that simple. So properly engineered, we could build generating systems that would utilize every single bit of energy, including what would have normally been classified as waste energy. And as far as electricity, instead of trying to generate enough energy to produce a lot of current flow, we could generate the energy to begin with in the form of heat with high frequency electricity that would in turn boil water into steam, turning turbines that would turn the generators necessary to literally bring the current watts and the amperage back up to run this inefficient junk that we all have. And from that point on, if you begin to design, re-engineer your appliances to run off of higher frequency radio waves or electricity, then sooner or later it would all catch up. You'd have your clean, renewable, alternative energy source that... There you go, folks. I don't know how much more simple that I could say it. If anybody out there listening is interested in trying to literally prove what I just said, I'll help you in any way possible. I'm working on some systems myself that I will be sharing with people, but you got to take this knowledge and you got to utilize it. It's all basic science. It's all basic physics. It's all so simple. It's just incredibly ridiculous. And back in the 1800s, probably even prior, we were boiling water into steam to run machinery or whatever. Steam engines have been around for a long time. And actually, there's a picture of one of the oldest known steam engines. But heat and pressure, electricity and pressure, water and pressure is what gets work done. We know how to boil water into steam. We know how to literally take high voltage and weld metals together. We know how to take high voltage arcs and literally burn materials. Start fire, so to speak. And so that's it. Anon said the powers that be afraid of us applying techniques to combustion engines, exposing the petrodollar matrix, applying 42.7 kilohertz to 13.57 megahertz Brown's gas to steam turbine or steam engine for electricity production is less threatening than the affecting the automobile oil cabals. Here's the thing, folks. People need to stop worrying about the auto industry, because there ain't nothing that you're ever going to do to change their points of view on things. They've got these technologies available already. They've already got the information on the shelf. Everything that I've said to you right now, they already know about. They could have done it a long time ago, but it's like this. You don't sell the iPhone 6 until you sell enough of the iPhone 5s. It's that simple. And if they're sitting on barrels and barrels of oil, they obviously don't want people running around knowing that you can run your car on water. I mean, it's blatantly obvious that, you know, industry, governments, they keep their control by the financial system. And so if you're going to try to deal with governments, if you're going to try to deal with industry out there, then you're never going to get free energy. It's not going to happen. What's going to happen is the average Joe is going to have to take and utilize all this knowledge while it's all readily available and still in your mind to build things for yourselves. And people would say, well, you know, I ain't got the money to build this, or I ain't got the knowledge to build this. Well, by yourself, no, you don't. But if you take and find the people in your communities, and you gather together and bring all the best pieces of the puzzle and those that have the talents and skills in welding and electrical and electronics and all that, you can build these devices as long as you're not trying to get rich off of them, as long as you're not trying to introduce them into the market, they're not going to mess with you. If there's too many people out there doing this stuff, they're going to, yeah, when they, you catch their eye, oh, wait, look, they got a car running on water over there. Well, we got to go try to buy that out from them. Well, look, they got a car running on water over there, too. We got to buy that. They'll be running around trying to buy all your stuff from you. And you just keep selling it to them. Because there's so many different ways to do the same doggone thing. They're going to flat out have to make it illegal for people to build or even be in possession of a free energy device. Otherwise, there's no way that they can stop you. It's not that you can't do it. It's that you got to get people in your communities networked and motivate each other to do it. Solar power is free energy. Whether you think it's efficient enough to utilize, that's up to you, but if you took solar power and you utilized it properly, everything that you know about solar power, the fact that if you ever go put your hand on a solar panel while it's the sun's beating on that, you'll notice that it has a lot of heat. You can capture that heat from the back of that solar panel. You can actually put those solar panels underwater and use the water to basically heat the water. There's so many different ways to make a solar panel so much more efficient than what it already is. So you already have access to free energy devices, whether you know it or believe it or want to agree with it or not. You already have access to it. Basically, if you look out there and you start taking appliances apart, you're going to find little pieces of the puzzle in all these different appliances. A tungsten element, for example. You know that a tungsten element is a resistive load. And so, if you put an incandescent light bulb into your average outlet, let's say you go from anywhere from 40 to 60 to 80 to 100 to 150 to 200 watt element inside that bulb. It's a resistive load. And basically, the current flow that's trying to get through there is creating a backup of electrons, creating resistance, which is creating friction, which in turn is creating heat, which is causing that light bulb to light up. But you can take that same light bulb and use less electricity by using a higher frequency to energize, vibrate that tungsten element so rapidly that it in turn produces friction, which in turn produces heat that lights that light bulb up. So, at least in the lighting portion, you can take that same, what would have been waste energy, and you can light that light bulb up. And if the frequency gets too high, just like as if the current flow gets too high, running it the normal way, if the frequency range gets too high, it'll get too hot, and it'll burn through the element, and the light bulb will go out. But then you could back that frequency down, even though that element is still burned out, you could still ramp the frequency up high enough to where it can literally leap across that broken part of the tungsten element and vibrate that tungsten anyway, producing friction, which in turn produces heat, and an otherwise would have been bad light bulb is now lighting up again. That's, once you understand how energy functions, then free energy should be apparent to you. It should be right there before your very eyes. High voltage, high frequency energy can be used for wireless energy transfer. It can be used to light up old tungsten elements with less amount of energy. I took a 12 volt battery, 20,000 volt oil burner igniter, and I literally lit up a 12 volt incandescent headlamp from an automobile that you can plug straight to the battery and it will not light up because the circuit is broke. The tungsten element was broke. But because of the frequency range that I was sending in through there from the Beckett oil burner igniter, it was able to leap across that burnt element to the other side and still do the same exact job using the vibrational frequency from the high frequency of that oil burner igniter. So anywhere between 10 to 20,000 volts, that thing was still lighting up. And the key about it is, I only had to go off one leg of this thing, and the other one be connected directly to the earth ground. The oil burner igniters can either jump from leg to leg, or you can separate them and use them from leg to ground. It's so... so ridiculously simple, it's mind-blowing. But you know that with high voltage, high frequencies, you can move energy rapidly. That's how the power company does it. Go out there and look at the power companies and ask them the question, hey, how many volts is that doggone power line going over the top of my house? You might be surprised. And you might be surprised the way they're sending that voltage to you. So once you get this all figured out as far as how easy it is to move energy from one point to the next when it's at such a high frequency, you can understand why high voltage is able to basically travel outside of an insulator and shock the living crud out of it. So, the key to free energy, clean, renewable alternative energy, is heat. There's a lot of heat in nature. There's also a lot of cold in nature. So, these temperature differences can be utilized for thermal electricity. These temperature differences can be utilized for heating and cooling. And these temperature differences could be utilized so that you would not have to burn any so-called fossil fuel. I keep on saying so-called fossil fuel because the crude oil industry wanted to tell you that there was a bunch of dinosaurs that basically made up a bunch of oil that sooner or later we're going to run out of. Which, if you would have paid attention in basic science and physics, then you would have understood that there is absolutely 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt no way physically possible for us to ever, ever, ever run out of crude oil. It's not possible. The only possibility could be that the Earth would quit doing what it does. Everything on this planet is a carbon-based life form, and when it dies, it's absorbed back into the system, and the same heat, the same pressure, the same chemistry that made all the so-called fossil fuels has been going on since the dawn of mankind, since this planet was around. And so you ain't going to run out of it. So your fight with the oil industry and the fuel industries, the energy industry, coal, whatever, it ain't never going to stop. It's never going to stop. They'll just find different ways to appease you by saying, oh, look, this is a perfectly clean burning motor that we still burn gasoline in. But because we designed it this way, it makes it where you have to use more gas. So, environmentally, you're going to pay for higher gas prices because they made it more efficiently so that it wouldn't pollute, but the process cost you, you have to use more gas in order to get from point A to point B. You see what I'm trying to say here? They're not going to cut back on the fuel. They're going to charge you more for the fuel and try to tell you that there's less of the fuel available, when there might be 50 to 60 oil tankers setting offshore, but we're almost out of oil. Imagine that. Well, if you ain't got no place to store it, and it's backing up out there at the deal, and trying to sell this gas for a super high prices, then they're going to get more and more gas. And if you stop buying their gas, guess what? The price goes down, because they got to get rid of it, because they got too much in the background. That's how they play you for a ball head. That's how they play all the people of the world like a banjo. Tell you that you're going to run out of it, sell it to you for a high price, you utilize it up, then they bring the price down, make you happy for a bit, and then they do it. They repeat the cycle again. We're going to make it so that we get filthy, stinking rich. And it don't matter. They could sell it for penny on the dollar and still make money, because they got it for free. Or they stole it from somebody. So the average Joe out there needs to understand that you can literally make your own crude oil. You can actually refine that crude oil into all kinds of different materials that can be utilized for all different types of products. There is tons and tons of what normally would be classified as biological waste out there that could be turned into biofuels. You know, I've been messing around with a pond. There's stuff called millweed, and there's stuff called duckweed, or watermill and duckweed. Look them up. Those two right there will replicate like twice every 24 hours, and they will literally destroy a pond. They'll suck all the nutrients out of the pond, and they will basically block out all the sunlight, killing off all the other plant life underneath there, all therefore depleting the oxygen and basically killing off your fish. And so your pond turns stagnant. But knowing that, you can take that same obnoxious deal and you can harvest it and make fertilizer with it. You can make fuel with it. You can make chicken feed with it. And you can make people food with it. There are so many different ways that you can utilize what would have normally been an obnoxious pond killing scum, algae, and fast replicating plant life. So if you look at the crude oil industry and you look out in your backyard at that scummy pond, you have the equivalence of the beginning of what that crude oil started off at before it finally turned all black and they were able to utilize it to make other fuels with. So you got a million people with a million ponds that keep growing this algaes and duckweed and watermill, and they refine this stuff into all kinds of useful products. There's people out there advocating for hemp that you can make, I think they said, like 50,000 different products. There's what the heck was that weed that Thomas was talking about? Kudzu. Any plant out there, even the most obnoxious ones, even the ones that like poison ivy, poison oak, or whatever, the ones that you can't stand could be harvested to make biofuel, to make all kinds of products. So when it comes down to unlimited resources, you already have it. Network with your communities and you can take this, what would have normally been trash, and turn it into a treasure, and you can free your fellow man by understanding basic science and chemistry and physics. You can beat them at their own game. You can essentially outdo the oil industries. And it's not like the oil industries can run around and whack every single person involved. That would get kind of obvious after a while, when people started dropping like flies because they had been making biofuel. You can make alcohol from fruits. You can make alcohol from any types of sugars. Alcohol is another fuel. So, no matter where you look, in every single direction that you look, there is nothing but energy and forms of energy and fuel sources to run all the power that you could ever need throughout this entire planet to infinity and beyond. And it will never, ever, ever, ever run out. Period. Unless this system stops doing what it does. This earth is a thermal electric generator, a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. Everything that you use gets recycled into the system, including you. So, unless somebody starts taking all our resources out to space, then you're never going to run out of anything. And for those folks who say that the world is overpopulated, I say you didn't pay attention. Period. Mike says water takes a lot of energy to heat. A refrigerant gas absorbs heat 2,000 to 6,000 times more efficient. It reacts to power in that much faster. So, what could you do with that knowledge? On the portion that says water takes a lot of energy to heat, that's true. But there are means by which you can heat that water using less amount of energy, just like the microwave oven. If you look at how a microwave oven actually functions, the most inefficient portion of the microwave oven is the primary coil on the microwave oven transformer. That is the most inefficient manner in which to run that magnetron. If you generate a high voltage, high frequency, whether it be using MOSFETs or transistors, and matter of fact, the modern day microwave ovens don't have a microwave oven transformer in there anymore. They have circuitry, the equivalence of the Slayer exciter circuit, which essentially takes a pulse DC charge and pulses a coil system that ramps the voltage up, that sends the voltage into the magnetron that in turn takes that high frequency and energizes the tungsten element inside the magnetron that produces heat, that releases electrons, that spins around inside the magnetic field inside there, that in turn is guided out the other side, basically through the equivalence of an antenna system, that in turn sends that microwave down and through waveguides that bounces around inside your microwave oven and heats your water. Within 2 minutes, you've got boiling water. Depending on the wattage of your microwave, you could do it in less than that. But nonetheless, the same process that would have took 120 volts AC at 60 hertz now only took a circuit that could run anywhere from 3 volts all the way up to 100 volts or higher, depending on how you design the actual circuit itself. If you actually follow down the schematics of the modern day microwaves, you'd be surprised, as opposed from the input of the microwave to the process by which it actually steps the voltage down before it ramps the voltage way in the heck up to send that high frequency into the magnetron. So we even have the technology to boil water faster. It's that simple. And once we get people to understand that, even if the microwave magnetron went bad, let's say hypothetically that inside the microwave magnetron, the tungsten element burns in half. The same process in which you could light up a burnout or blown 100 watt element inside of a incandescent light bulb, or a element inside of a burnout headlamp for an automobile, the frequency is high enough that it can literally leap across that spark gap now and energize that tungsten, still vibrating it, producing energy, which produces friction and which produces heat. So even a bad magnetron will still do the same job, because the only job the magnetron has is the same exact job that a light bulb has. The difference is they use the energy that's flowing inside there when the electrons, when the heat releases electrons inside that chamber, they begin to spin around and produce a magnetic field that is a super fast short wave that we call a microwave. So with a 12 volt car battery, you could run a couple magnetrons that would boil water faster. The average microwave magnetron starts off at 120 volts AC to at 60 hertz and ramps that voltage up from the primary to the secondary to about 2,000 volts. A Beckett oil burner igniter goes from 12 volts DC up to 20,000 volts of electricity. And depending on who you talk to, it could be 10,000 per leg, or it's 20,000 per leg. It doesn't matter. Nonetheless, you just took, instead of running that magnetron by 2,000 volts, you just threw in 10,000 volts, or 10,000 to 20,000 volts, and threw the same tungsten element at a higher frequency, in turn producing heat, which produced the electron flow inside the magnetron, and be able to make a microwave more powerful than the microwave was originally designed for. So there you go, man. Anon said, I have some current link to research on water as fuel using frequencies from Greece, Petros, as I can't even pronounce that, Zagrafos. Posted on Facebook at Garvey Energy Project, Make Electric Community Level, Teach High School. And he's got a Facebook address. Anyway, sorry I missed that comment, because I went straight to the one about water takes a lot of energy to heat. It does. Water is the most stable molecule on the planet, but the way in which you're actually going to heat this water, that's going to make the difference of how much energy it takes to put in to actually heat the water. Even with any of the noble gases, all you're doing is vibrating those gases so rapidly that they produce friction, which in turn produces heat, which in turn produces light. Science says light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. So with that said, the same process going on inside a plasma globe that produces visible light that you can see, a nifty toy, you run your finger on there and have the plasma chase your finger around. That same process would boil water. because at the heart of that plasma is a lot of heat. It's not like an open-air plasma cutter that actually uses the atmosphere and the high voltage, high frequency to actually produce a plasma right around the deal where you're actually cutting through steel and stuff like that. It's a contained plasma inside a chamber, a vacuum, that if you took and energized it too high, you would build up enough heat pressure inside that to literally explode that globe. Because heat expands. But there's not that much, argon inside there. And you're not actually generating enough heat inside the deal because of the way that you're doing it inside of a vacuum. But by making a few modifications to a plasma globe, you can turn that plasma globe into a water heater. And by ramping that frequency up, the voltage up higher, you can literally turn that system into the equivalence of what a nuclear reactor is without the radioactive qualities that you have in your modern day reactors. So, the answer's right there. I'm hoping that people will run with that knowledge and share it with everybody and their brother. Because it's not rocket science. You vibrate something fast enough, you produce heat. You set it out in the sun long enough, the sun basically rattles all the molecules inside there and produces friction, which in turn produces heat. That's why if you set a car tire in the back of your pickup truck and the sun beats down on it all day, and then when the sun goes down and somebody jumps in the back to sit on that tire, they find out they get their biscuits burnt because that material has the capability of literally storing heat. Heat is the key to all the energy out there. Heat's utilized in the internal combustion engine. Heat's utilized in the generation of electricity. Heat's used to move water molecules from one point of the planet to the next. When the water is evaporated due to the heat, it goes up to the clouds. The clouds fly over the top of a mountain, dump it down into lakes and stuff like that. And then that water falls downhill and the smart man puts a paddle wheel down there and turns that paddle wheel turns the generator head with that power wheel, and now he has hydroelectric. So once you understand that, then you got everything necessary to produce your own generating systems. And it's just a matter of how you want to design them, how you want to engineer them. You find the materials that when you set out in the sun will hold the most amount of heat, and then you take a stopwatch or a clock or whatever, document the time of how long this heat will actually hold in there, and then use other processes and other materials such as water, material that is gathering up the heat, and you'll note that heat will try to transfer to the water, and when the water gets to a certain temperature, that heat will actually try to transfer back. That's how the solar powered water heaters are functioning that people put on top of their roofs. That garden hose that you left laying out inside there, that the heat got so hot that now the garden hose is really spongy and flexible, whereas it used to be stiff when it was cold. But nonetheless, coiled up out there in the sunlight, and you turn your water on and put your hand in front of it, you notice the water is hotter than all get out because it had been absorbing that heat from the rubber of the hose and transferring that heat back and forth from the water to the rubber, which held the heat for a long time. So you could build your own thermal electric slash steam generating power plants utilizing every force that you know, including the internal combustion engine. Instead of having to run a gasoline generator all day long, you just bring it up to operating temperature. You utilize the heat that is generated by the waste energy of that to store that heat energy. And then you turn that heat energy into either steam, or you turn that heat energy into thermoelectrics via any of the known Peltier elements, thermocouples, thermopiles, and then you shut that generator off. During the daytime, the solar panels is out. They're charging the system up. The nighttime, you can run the generator to supplement the power source to produce heat. And when you get it down to its most efficient potential, then you would barely ever have to turn the generator on. Thus forth, using a whole lot less fuel. So you could get one generator to literally produce enough heat energy. And in conjunction with your wind power and your solar power, your hydroelectrics, utilizing all the known forms of thermoelectrics, you have the equivalence of free energy. And if you don't want to go out and buy your fuel, then you make it fuel. It's as simple as that. Go find somebody who works on alcohol burning engines and ask them the process by which they make fuel for an alcohol burner, and ask them the process by which they actually change the carburetor by changing the jet sizes in order to be able to burn alcohol, and the way that they set the timing and such to get it to run off of that specific fuel. You can modify a gasoline engine to run off of alcohol. You can modify a diesel engine with very little modifications to run off of any type of biodiesel. There's so many different ways, including utilizing water technology, to turn that into fuel, that if you got into your neighborhood with all your most brilliant individuals and you networked, you could utilize all this information to literally build the equivalence of the People's Power Company, where you guys build generators and you find out its maximum amount of kilowatts per hour, whatever, and you share that energy amongst each other, and eventually become completely off the grid. That's how you're going to win this energy game. And as far as vehicles, the technology for electric vehicles, there are some really awesome looking electric motorcycles out there that if you utilize this basic science and physics, you could make those things charge themselves. You'd never have to plug the doggone thing in, and even if you did have to plug it in, it wouldn't have to be for very long. You can pick up energy on the way down the road to put back into that vehicle, via solar power, via wind power, via static electric power, via thermal energy. There's so many different ways to basically pick up and store and utilize energy while this vehicle is doing what it normally does, taking you from point A to point B. It's as simple as that. So, for those folks out there that say energy is not free and there's no such thing as a free energy device, I'm saying you didn't pay attention in science. You didn't pay attention in physics. You didn't pay attention in math. As brilliant as a lot of people out there believe themselves to be, they sure missed out on a lot of simple concepts. And for me, it drives me nuts. That's why I call it mad science. Because if we utilize what we already know and all the existing technologies that we got, then we wouldn't be listening to people all the time talking about you got to reduce your carbon footprint. We wouldn't be listening to people saying we need clean, renewable, alternative energy sources. We'd just already have it resolved. The issue would already be done. But instead, you still have people out there fighting wars over resources. And you still have people allowing those individuals who are supposedly representation for the people to do exactly that. There ain't no reason to be out warring over oil. There ain't no reason to be fighting over who's right and who's wrong in the field of free electricity or alternative energy, because there's so many different ways to utilize the forces of nature to get work done. Even in third world countries that they classify, and I don't know why they have third world country, I don't know why they classify people as third world nations or whatever, non-industrial nation, if they want heating and cooling, fresh water, then here in the year 2017 they should have it already. The technology is already available, and it's been available for a long time. But for some reason there's people out there who so-called leadership that want to maintain a power structure that ends up keeping these people down, which in my mind is worse than a crime. In my mind, what these folks are doing to the world, what they're doing to the environment and one another, is worse than any crime you could possibly imagine. It perpetuates the downfall of humanity. We have every piece of the puzzle, every single answer to every single question, and every single technology necessary to build the perfect power supplies, the perfect tools, the perfect generating systems, the perfect machines. And mankind to this point has not fully implemented the greatest potential in the history of time. We've got access to the internet. We've got access to knowledge that nobody has ever had access to before. At some point in time, technology will get so incredibly advanced that people will abuse it. And so maybe, just maybe, it might be a good thing that we don't go too far too fast. But at the point where somebody in this world is homeless, and somebody in this world is starving, and somebody in this world is sick because technology wasn't utilized properly, that is an incredible travesty and a waste. We got everything we need to literally fix this world. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no reasons why you can't do it. No valid reasons why you can't do it. Naysayers and doomsdayers and people who continually complain about how miserable life is and how we all need to run and stick our head in the sand and hide, they only do one thing, and that is support the same beast that they complain against. They only hinder all of mankind. So you don't hear old Shaziz on Mad Science or whatever telling you that the world is coming to an end and we're all doomed. Send me money so I can buy me a bug out bag and a shelter. No, I'm sitting here and I'm explaining in graphic detail why it is that you have everything you need to resolve every single issue under the sun. If you're looking for the solutions, they're out there. But the solutions are only going to be as good as the communities that you have that will implement these solutions and make them happen. Make it so. I would be more than happy to talk to any group out there that wanted to understand a few simple things that I've learned in science so that they could use these technologies and ideas that existed well before I was here to make their communities so incredibly energy efficient. And that's what they said needed to be done. So for all the doomsdayers out there and all the naysayers and all the trolls on the doggone internet trying to tell people, oh, you're stupid, that's not possible, there ain't no such thing as free energy or blah blah, or even the ones that are scamming people trying to make money, all you're doing is not only hurting yourself, but you're hindering mankind. See, I'm the one that believes that we can boldly go where no man has gone before. I'm the one that believes that if we come together and put these pieces of the puzzle where they should be, then we can all get the big picture and save all of mankind. If the governments of the world can afford billions of dollars in fuel costs to go over to foreign nations and mop them into the Stone Age, then the same said governments could redirect their resources to go over there and to help those in need. It's all a matter of choice. Just like free energy is all a matter of choice. I said that I was going to prove 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt that energy was free. And I think that I've more than done that. But I'm going to put a device together and I'm going to make it so. And from that point on, whatever the world does with that device is all on the world. Because I'm getting tired. I want to help the world because the world said they needed help. I want to give them the answers that they all requested. They said we need a clean, renewable, alternative energy. They said we need to save the planet. They said we had an energy crisis. And so, myself and many other researchers stepped to the front. And we showed them the answers. So, if you believe in global warming, you should be backing these folks. If you believe in so-called climate change or climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math and the science don't add up, then you should be backing these folks. But you should be cautious when you back these folks to make sure they ain't the Keshis of the world. The scam artist after trying to sell you a free energy device. The knowledge, if it's not given freely, if it comes at a price, then it isn't free energy. And it's not the truth. So, any device, any energy device, or any energy plans, or any ideas there at ShazizRadio.com are coming to you completely and utterly free. And what you do with them is up to you. If you discount the simple, such as thermoelectrics, when thermoelectric, like a thermocouple or a thermal pile, any thermoelectric process, when those two metals reach the same exact temperature, the process will stop. That's why they say that thermoelectrics isn't efficient, because at a certain point you can't get any more energy transfer. But by understanding this concept, they were able to design the Peltier element that would use a heat sink on one side and a heat source on the other side, and the heat sink was to take away the temperature on one side to keep a constant temperature difference and be able to produce more electricity. So to discount thermoelectrics would be basically to short yourself in whatever device you design. Heat transfer, energy transfer, heating and cooling, all both work hand in hand. And if you can understand electricity, if you can understand plumbing, you can understand pressure, you can understand valves, you can understand electricity, electronics, all of it is working in the same fashion. You got valves that will only allow things to go one way, which would be the equivalent of a resistor in or a diode in a circuit board. You got valves that will have to only be able to go one way in water, which would be a check valve that would allow pressure one way, but any back pressure would be stopped back the other direction. Transistors, resistors, diodes, check valves, positive displacement pumps, negative displacement pumps, all kinds of different, whatever you can see in plumbing, you're actually watching going on in the form of electricity. The same processes. Voltage is pressure, and pressure gets work done. The same thing applies with water. And when you boil the water into steam, you build pressure. Heat expands and cold contracts. Basic science. And that knowledge can be utilized to take whatever machine you want to design and make it so incredibly efficient that there is zero waste. That's it. We can do it. Anything can be used as a fuel when atomized and vaporized. And there is energy in everything. You are literally right now floating in a sea of energy. All the atmosphere that's around you, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, and whatever gas molecules might be flowing astray in there, all of them react the same way when energized with high frequencies, low frequencies. The same thing applies with water, pressurized, agitated, whatever. If you ever want to see how a magnetic field travels, put a bowl of water on the table and put your finger right in the middle and tap it. And you'll see the same thing happening with a magnetic field. So once you understand those ripples, then you now are beginning to understand frequency. How rapidly you tap that water will determine the frequency rate of the waves that are being traveled out. And if you tap that thing super rapid, eventually the pressure will build up so much that it will literally begin to spill over the sides. That's what Nikola Tesla showed you with the Tesla coil, with high voltage. That you could literally amplify that energy by the speed at which you sent the energy in to the system. See, we don't do nothing really other than to throw nature off balance, and when nature balances itself back out, we get work done in between. That's the way it all functions. And by utilizing the forces of nature that are so apparent and readily available, the answer to the question of their clean, renewable, alternative energy sources, the answer to your free electricity, all your energy needs, to be able to live in the same comforts and lifestyle that you live right now, are right there at your fingertips. So, put the right crew into a lab, give them the resources necessary to build whatever it is that needs to be built, and you will have your free energy device. Period. And also have somebody on the other side watching to ensure that the moment they start going astray, that you kick them back in line or pull the funding so that you're not getting ripped off. These folks that go out there with blind faith and follow inventors out there that and give them tons and tons of money but never get what they were promised, haven't understood that one man by himself does not have the answers. It takes all the men and women with all the different knowledge, all the different skill sets in order to complete the picture in that puzzle. If you got a guy who can weld, if you got a guy who knows everything about electronics, you got a mathematician, you got a engineer, you got a man who can draw it up and explain it to people. You put all these pieces of the puzzle into the right lab with the right material and you get what you paid for. How do you think industry does it? They go out and find you. And they bring you and the guy that's smarter than you in a different subject to their shops, and they provide them with everything they need to get all the products that you go to buy at your store. There's ways that you can actually utilize each other's skill sets and resources to generate funds that you can then in turn use to fund your research. There is so much waste in this world that could be utilized for materials. There's plastics thrown away. There's glass thrown away. There's tons and tons of chemistry thrown away. Just think about how many times you've dropped a battery into the trash. And think about all the materials that's inside there. Lithium, nickel, cadmium, alkalines, and the metals that they're wrapped in. The materials. By recycling and repurposing what otherwise would end up being industry's trash, you now have the resources available for you to make your own designs. People out there doing research into everything from hemp batteries to graphene technology, paintable conductors and such, utilizing all the materials that they have available to them. There's no excuse right now for humanity not to come together and resolve all the so-called issues of the world. No excuse. The only way to get out from underneath the thumb of the system of the beast that's eating everybody alive is for humanity to unite and begin to create and design. Instead of trying to tear down the system that they got, build yours right alongside and let the best system win. The average Joe out there working in harmony with one another, working in harmony with nature, you get enough people doing that, and everything that you need and all the freedom that comes with it will be within your grasp. Folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. I'm going to take a music break because I have a headache. And I don't know where everybody went as far as...
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, could you describe the ruckus, sir? The Seebeck effect, that's the ruckus. Alright, is a phenomenon in which a temperature difference between two dissimilar electrical conductors or semiconductors produces a voltage difference between the two substances, thus forth producing electricity. Close that one there. Thermoelectrics comes in all kinds of different forms. They have Coleman power chillers out there that uses a Peltier element inside the deal to use temperature difference for a thermal heat exchange, where you put electricity to it and it will make one side hot and make one side cold. So on one side you can heat your food, and on the other side you can cool your food. You can get a 400 watt 12 volt thermoelectric cooler Peltier element for $19.99 on eBay, or you can buy a set of 5x TEC1 -12706, that's the part number, 72 watt heat sink Peltier plates thermo cooler heat for $12.89 on eBay. So it's already there. You got all kinds of Thermotech shielding materials which will keep the heat in or keep the heat out, vice versa. There's actually Bonavita, looks like a tea kettle or a coffee pot that uses Peltier technology as well. So, thermoelectric generators right there, and basically heating and cooling using temperature differences. So, we close that one down. We don't need that anymore. And googled up heat energy, and the first thing that came up is said is excessive heat warning northwestern Missouri. That's kind of like around where I'm at. It's hotter than all get outside, but that heat energy can be turned into air conditioning because heat causes expansion, which in turn causes pressure, which in turn can heat a gas, any liquid, and vaporize it, and so on. And then using basic laws of physics and basic science, you can turn that heat expansion and pressure into a rapid expansion into a cooling. It's the way the HVAC, heating and cooling, air conditioning, heat pumps, and so on work. So, utilizing all the knowledge of how things function, such as air compressors, compressors for your doggone freezers, compressors for your air conditioners, compressors for your refrigerators, whatever. All of the technology based on basic science. Use electric motors and such to build a compressor that will compress the gases and then turn around and run those gases through an expansion chamber to release that pressure rapidly. It's the same effect that you get whenever you have a can of CO2 and you open the can real quick and allow that to get out there. You'll notice the frost that builds up. They use that in fire extinguishers as well. Because CO2 is a heavier molecule, it displaces oxygen. If you take the oxygen away from the fire, then you put the fire out. And at the same point, it also has a cooling effect on the materials that it is coming in contact with. So if you understand the fire extinguisher technology, and you understand heat differences and heating and air conditioning technology, then you understand how you can literally build yourself free energy devices. For example, You've seen that they have water heaters that you can put on the roof of your house. And these water heaters will basically absorb sunlight, transfer that heat energy from the sunlight to the water, and circulate it down into your hot water tank. By doing this, your hot water thermostat will never kick on the element which is necessary to use electricity in order to heat your water. So at the very least, one of these systems set outside your house would reduce your electric bill by not ever kicking your electric on for your hot water heater. And so that will cut your bill down, less money you have to pay. So just by adding a supplemental system to your hot water heater, you can ensure that your electric bill never skyrockets while you're heating water all day long for nothing, as opposed to heating water all day long for, you know, whatever price of your local power company wants to charge you per kilowatt. So we can resolve the water heater in your house and still give you hot showers. That's easy to do. We can resolve your air conditioning and your heating. For example, your air conditioner has to work harder because of certain devices that are in your house, such as your refrigerator. Your refrigerator has to get rid of heat, so it has a coil system on the back that basically disperses the heat from inside the compressor to outside the refrigerator. Well, that heat transferred into your room means that your air conditioner has to work harder to get rid of the heat. So if you build your walls to where you can vent this heat off of the back of your refrigerator to a different area outside, or maybe you want to guide it down into the basement to heat the basement or whatever, or even utilize the heat to help to, you know, keep your hot water heater maintained. Wrapping some copper tubing up around the back of that, coiling it up on the back of that freezer or refrigerator coil that is dispersing the heat will transfer that energy through the copper into whatever water or liquid that you're basically circulating through it, which will make it more efficient, taking the heat away. The big deal is that you do not want the heat escaping into the same house that you're trying to cool with your air conditioning unit. So, two different items that use a lot of energy at your house could be supplemented and make them more efficiently. Instead of having to run a compressor system, designing an air conditioner or a freezer system that would literally use solar power to heat water to a gaseous state, and then turn around and use that pressure to run in through an expansion chamber and get the same exact result that you would without having to have a compressor. All of this technology is readily available and simple to understand if you paid attention in basic science. Basic science and physics. So I guess my goal around here is to make my place so incredibly energy efficient that I don't even need to get off the power grid, because I'm barely paying them a red cent, because I'm utilizing everything that nature has provided: wind, heat, cold, all of it. In every single direction, every single thing being utilized so incredibly efficient that I barely even have to pay a bill. Then the power company don't even have a clue, other than the fact that for some reason your energy usage has dropped dramatically, in which case they will send a man out to check your meter and try to accuse you of stealing electricity because you're still running the same things. That's the way that it works. So, if you decide to go completely and utterly off the power grid, then you will have to contend with people that will say, he's either stealing electricity or he's stealing money from the system that we all rely on for taxing and doing all that kind of stuff. So you're up against the machine when you're trying to get away from the machine. You're up against the system when you're trying to become completely off the grid. I've had many people ask me, why aren't you off the power grid if you already know about free electricity? Well, the moment I get off a power grid, completely and utterly off the power grid, is the moment that this show will cease to exist. Because chances are, I will be shut up and I will cease to exist. So, until it's time for everyone else, including myself, to go off the power grid and do it with style, then I need to stay on and pay my dues. It doesn't mean that in the process that I can't make my home so energy efficient and show others how to do just the same. But once you get to the point where you start to picking at the wallet, the pennies out of the pocket of the man, that's when you get the attention. It happened to Stan Myers and many others. It happened to Nikola Tesla. And you see through history how they fared. So, with that said, comes a little bit of wisdom. There is a method to my madness. Shaziz Mad Science is a lot more than meets the eye. So when it's all said and done, if the people choose free energy, they will be given free energy. It's as simple as that. No ifs, ands, or buts. No strings attached. No price tag. If it came at a price, and it isn't free. Knowledge is power, and the way that you share that knowledge is going to define the way that humanity excels or decelerates into the future and beyond. We have the potential right now to literally bring about a heaven on earth if we choose to do so. We have the potential to boldly go literally where no man has gone before. We have the potential to bring our society into the next stage of so-called evolution. And to work in such perfect harmony with one another and nature to make all the world's dreams come true. That's the choice that we have before us. Those are the possibilities. Now, the only thing I ask in return is that if you live anywhere or if you have access to any social media network, you spread the news. That's it. Tell everybody and his brother about what you heard. You don't even have to say it came from ShazizRadio.com. But if you care to do so, you can share the podcast, you can share the information, share the ideas, and spread them worldwide. There are those out there with all the answers necessary to give the world the clean, renewable, alternative energy resources necessary. There are people out there that are willing to resolve every single issue under the sun, including any radioactive contamination or repairing any damage done to nature. We have the tools, we have the technology, and we have the knowledge to make it so. The only thing we're lacking is you. I'm not selling anything. I'm not trying to get fame nor fortune. I'm just trying to answer a call. The world said that they needed clean, renewable alternative energy, so that the wars over resources and oil would cease to exist. If there are homeless in this world, then we, as mankind and humanity, need to find them shelter. If there are people that need fresh water, we need to show them how. If there are people in this world who are starving, then we need to feed them. And the only ones in this world that will do it, that can do it, that have the power to succeed, is we the people. The rest of them follow their lives for power and greed. And if you ain't got power and greed in your heart, and you care about humanity, and you want to see all of mankind literally boldly go where no man has gone before, then now is the time to spread the news. Energy is free. I think I've more than proven it over and over and over again. I will build the most efficient devices that I can build and show you every idea that I come across. And what you do with that information is up to you. That's my contribution. That is my first stepping stone laid for our children and our children's path into the future. If you believe in what I believe in, which is the dream, one day having a humanity, a world where everyone can have all that they need, then help me. Help you by telling the world. Peace and love to everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. I hope you join me on the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Same time, same channel. 8 a.m. Central to 11 a.m. Central. Join us in the chat room and bring a friend. That's how we make this happen. I got plenty of ideas, and I need to hear yours. So with that said, take care, peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.